This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, 7:06 Wednesday, the 17th of August, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Keith Kam and I'm Wong Xiaoning. Now, in about 30 minutes, we'll be speaking to Dave Sakara. He's the Chief US Market Strategist at Morningstar on the corporate results season that's happening there. But let's recap how global markets closed yesterday.
Over on Wall Street, it was sort of mixed. The Dow was up 0.7%. The S&P 500 was 0.2% higher, but the Nasdaq closed 0.2% lower. Earlier in the day, though, Asian markets, we saw the Nikkei closing flat-ish, down 0.01%. The Hong Kong's Hang Seng was down 1.1%. Shanghai's Composite Index was up 0.05%. Singapore's STI closed 0.1% lower. And back home, the FBM KLCI was up 1%, one whole percent.
Wow, which brings our FBM KLCI index to 1,518 points. But for more on international markets, we have on the line with us Jack Kuzi, Director for Strategy at VFS Group. Good morning, Jack. Now, US, let's talk about all the bills that passed, but a little bit, this bill which was signed a little bit earlier on this month was, of course, the $200 billion chip bill to counter China. Now, how effective do you think this will be for the US to prop up their own semiconductor industry?
Yeah, good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on the show this morning. I think it'll be effective in the long run. I mean, this is not going to solve the issue that the world is facing right now, and that's an over-reliance on something, on a company called TSMC. So if for your listeners, there are three parts of chip technology. There's the design part, there's the foundry part, and there's the assembly part. The probably most important and critical component now is the foundry part, making the chips. You know, we're seeing a lot of companies designing their own chips. Tech players are moving in, such as Apple. But getting these high-end chips made and delivered on time is the issue. You know, we saw car shortages earlier on. We saw chip shortages. But it's the foundry part that's the issue. And I think the US and other countries around the world are trying to borrow the Taiwanese model of making these chips on site in their own countries, or at least in friendly countries around their region. So this is an initiative we're seeing not only from the US, the Japanese are trying to do it. Europe's talking about a chip bill. This is a trend. And of course, it's to push against, you know, China dominating this sector. And, you know, China's a long way from doing that. But yeah, this is a great bill. I think it's going to be really good for their chip sector in the long term, but it's not necessarily going to solve the issues that they've got in the short term right now.
There's this question of time, Jack. I mean, everyone's really pressed for time when it comes to this. How much time can the US and whatever country that's coming up with similar moves afford?
I mean, this is at least a 3 to 10 year plan. I mean, you've got to build the factories first. They're very expensive. They take a long time. You also need knowledge and intellectual ability to make these chips, and you need the process in making them. So, you know, we're at the stage where we're looking at a 5nm. You know, TSMC is working on a 3. So, you know, the advancements that we're making in them means you're constantly behind, but it's a very, very expensive process, and it takes a lot of infrastructure physically. And intellectually, you need the right people. So, you know, this is not something you switch on overnight. Yeah. It's something that takes a lot of time. And, you know, it takes a while to build these factories, and it takes a couple of years at least. So it's not something necessarily we're going to see, you know, come into the market or have a real effect in the short term.
Yeah, but does this benefit the likes of, let's say, the listed companies, Intel, Qualcomm?
Yeah, it will. I mean, Intel more so, because Intel does have a foundry component. When you look at the likes of Qualcomm, AMD, NVIDIA, they're designers of chips. Now, having more foundries, and if they get into that model, will help them, and having more US foundries will assist them, or at least US factories. I mean, we're talking about TSMC building one in the US, definitely. But, you know, they're more on the design component. So yes and no. But I still think the real benefits of these chip bills won't be felt, you know, in the next 12 to 24 months.
China's July data came in well below expectations, with the real estate slump and COVID controls dragging down growth. How much more wiggle room does the government have, given that Xi Jinping is still quite headstrong with COVID restrictions?
Yeah, well, President Xi, I think, has got a lot of wiggle room. I mean, he's going for an unprecedented third term. The data wasn't great. You're talking about property prices now that have been down 11 months in a row. So I guess there's two flip sides to this. Is a worrying concern, you know, the Chinese are trying to depress asset prices from about 2 years ago. And the worrying thing is, have they depressed them too much? And are we starting to see the floor fall out of this? The second point is these tight COVID controls really working? And right now the data is telling us it's not working. So whether they readjust their approach to COVID, I don't think we're going to see that going forward. The other argument is they'll tell you, you know, we want asset prices to come down. Where, you know, they talk about common prosperity, they were worried about asset bubbles in the economy, and property was certainly one of those. So it's a worrying sign, undoubtedly, considering you're seeing slower growth. And what we saw was an unprecedented move by the Chinese in the last 2 days by lowering lending rates within the economy to try to stimulate growth. What I will tell you is that cash is actually quite flush within the Chinese economy. So they were trying to reduce some of these inflationary concerns 18 to 24 months ago, and they've seemed to get that under control. So they still have a lot of room in terms of liquidity, in terms of the PBOC pumping some liquidity into the system to try to benefit the economy. I still think they're going to have a better second half in terms of GDP growth, which should start to flow into some other areas of the market. And we have seen some good components. I mean, e-commerce sales were up for the month, the highest that they've seen in the last 7 months. So there are negative and positive concerns within China, but the property market is something I think they're very concerned about. It's an asset class owned by a lot of Chinese, both the rich and the medium class. And if we start to see more depressed prices, that definitely starts to eat into consumption.
So how do you see the Chinese youth unemployment at 19.9%, the highest on record, playing into this?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big figure. Generally, when you look at economic data and you compare unemployment to youth unemployment, you normally see a double around the world. So if we look at China's unemployment rates, roughly around 5.7%, that usually reflects a, you know, 11.4 unemployment rate when you compare that to statistics around the world. The fact that it's 19% is obviously of a great concern. I think it's the fifth month in a row that started to accumulate. What you have seen is COVID controls. You know, this has really hurt small and medium businesses who are big employers of Chinese youth that are coming out of university. And you've obviously been in the midst of a tightening of tech regulators, and they've, you know, brought down their headcounts. An interesting intricacy, obviously, you start to see a lot more flow into the public sectors, where the public sector is really offering some great, you know, lifetime employment. Excuse me, that's my phone. And we may see that go through. So I think it's all about China opening up their economy and pushing consumption going forward. And that's going to be about growth and whether they continue with these COVID controls. But again, not great data. Another not great data point coming out of China.
Okay, Jack, very quickly, what do you make of the news that Tencent might be selling its stake in Meituan, which is being reported by Reuters?
Yeah, if you talk about tech regulation and what China is trying to do, one of the overarching concerns that they have was market concentration. So if you take Tencent, it has a stake in VIP Shop. It has a stake in Bilibili. It has a stake in Didi Global. You look at Baba, it has a stake in JD.com. So you saw two or three major companies with, you know, big stakes in all their major tech players. Their view is that this is not conducive to innovation. It's not conducive to creating new technologies and creative growth. So you saw most of those stocks that Tencent has ownership in down overnight in ADRs in the US of concern that they're going to continue to sell those stakes. So, you know, does it affect the long-term concerns of Meituan? For me, it doesn't, but you may see more selling down of these big ownerships that Tencent has because of direct pressure from central authorities in China.
All right. Thank you very much. That was Jack Kuzi, Director for Strategy at VFS Group, ending the conversation on the supposed sale by Tencent of their listed vehicle. Well, actually, the food delivery app, Meituan, to appease Beijing. So you might see some selling pressure on that stock. But very quickly, in US, there were some results, of one of which is, of course, Walmart. Excuse me. Thinking of the nuts. Second quarter sales grew by 8% to $153 billion, exceeding analyst expectations. However, during the quarter, consumers have been feeling the pinch of inflation and turning to the discounter for groceries and essentials as the company witnessed tightened profits. So share price did rise 5%, the most in almost 2 years.
It's interesting to see Walmart is the world's biggest retailer. Its e-commerce sales rose 12% compared with the 1 year ago period, 18% on a two-year basis. So it kind of looks like people are still doing online shopping despite physical stores being opened after.
Yeah, it's become a way of life, right? A habit, and everybody's approaching it from even on an individual basis. You're doing this omni-channel shopping, but what they think the big takeaway from the results is that shoppers are actually buying less high-margin discretionary merchandise like apparel, and they're just spending more on necessities.
Essentials.
Yeah, so you can see perhaps top line being maintained, but it's actually bottom line being squeezed. So the profits at the end of the day might not be as strong. Now, the company also is selling its glut of inventory. I think that's important because a lot of stores, and we saw that even with Gap and Target doing so. But the street still likes this name. 31 buys, 10 holds, no sales. Consensus target price for Walmart, $146.81. This is not after hours closing price, but at 5 p.m. US, the stock did close $139.37. Home Depot also reported pretty decent higher second quarter earnings and revenue that beat analyst expectations. So both suggesting that the U.S. economy, in terms of how consumption is, still remains strong. But up next, we'll be speaking to Dr. Kaur Swee King, co-founder of the Malaysian Health Coalition, on the white paper. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.